Good morning, Your Honor. Tony Farmani on behalf of Appellant Mr. San Nicolas. Your Honor, Mr. San Nicolas is serving a life sentence for murder, and all the state ever showed was that he foolishly agreed to arrange and referee a one-on-one fight between two people, rival gang members, one of whom was his friend Varela. It's undisputed that the theory of the prosecution...
All he did was arrange a one-on-one fight?
He agreed. He agreed to arrange a one-on-one fight.
He drove to rival... He was the driver of the car, right?
That's correct, Your Honor.
He drove to rival gang territory.
That's correct, Your Honor.
Looking to set up this one-on-one fight.
With two other gang members.
With two other gang members and...
In his car.
In his car. And he was armed.
He was armed, but he never used a gun.
Well... Wasn't there a witness that followed that said the driver of the car got out and shot?
It's undisputed. He never used a gun. It is undisputed.
He offered it to Varela.
No,
he showed it to Varela, said, do you want this? And Varela said, no. Right? He offered it to Varela.
Well, let me back up for a second and tell this. You're referring to what happened before they went into Baker Street. What happened was... what happened was Varela gets into a scuffle, gets sucker punched by a guy from Baker Street. Goes home, calls client.
We know.
I think the notion or the fact or the witness testimony that Mr. San Nicolas was carrying a gun is simply irrelevant. And here's why. The jury found that he wasn't even vicariously discharging a firearm. Meaning the fact that Alvarado, which is the culprit here, who fired a gun, had nothing to do whatsoever with Mr. San Nicolas. Another critical factor here is, Your Honor, the judge, at the close of the prosecution's case, dismissed the conspiracy charges right off the bat, found that there was absolutely no agreement whatsoever between Alvarado, the shooter, and Mr. San Nicolas.
This is an AEDPA case. Is it subject to AEDPA?
At first glance, it would appear to be, but it isn't. AEDPA doesn't apply to the first claim here, and there are two reasons why it doesn't. Number one, the California Supreme Court never adjudicated the claim. So this is different than Richter, because Richter, you had California Supreme Court adjudicating a habeas petition. This was a direct review. There was never, ever a state habeas petition filed here. Direct review, the California summary denies it. So under California law and under this court's recent case, Williams, that does not constitute an adjudication of the claim. You go back to the Court of Appeal. You look through that opinion or the California Supreme Court summary denial to the California Court of Appeals opinion. The California Court of Appeal never, ever adjudicated the constitutional claim here. That's precisely what Williams held.
The constitutional claim of Jackson versus...
Insufficiency of the evidence. We've got two certified claims here.
Then under Pinholster versus Collins, shouldn't you be asking for a stay and go back and get a state court adjudication and post-conviction remedies?
Your Honor, he did exhaust the claim. The AG is already, the state has already conceded that in their answer. They waived any exhaustion argument to begin with, but he did, in fact, exhaust that claim. The question becomes, under Williams, which is a case decided by this court in 2011, the question is, did the California Court of Appeal, given that the California Supreme Court's summary denial was not an adjudication under California law, unlike the Richter case. The Richter case you had on a habeas summary denial. Over here, you have a summary denial on a direct petition for review. That's a very important distinction. Once you make that distinction, then Richter simply doesn't apply. The presumption, Richter presumption doesn't apply. Then you look through to the California Court of Appeals opinion. The California Court of Appeals opinion adjudicated Mr. San Nicolas' insufficiency of the claim, insufficiency of the evidence claim, under California law. In fact, all the court did was talk about Penal Code Section 1111, which is the amount of evidence you need to corroborate accomplice testimony. Never addressed a Sixth Amendment claim. Furthermore, Your Honor, putting that aside, you have a California Court of Appeal opinion that time and time again says proof beyond a reasonable doubt is not required. It says that it need not prove every element of the crime, the accomplice corroboration. Obviously, they're going forward on a mistaken view that this is only a statutory claim. It wasn't. It was a constitutional claim, sufficiency of the evidence claim.
So your argument is that we can review the sufficiency of the evidence claim as if we were the California Court of Appeal.
Because you would review it.
Let me finish. Because no other court has.
The way I would say, Your Honor, you would review the first claim, the insufficiency of the evidence claim, de novo. Because it has never been adjudicated,
Let's assume you're right about that. Then isn't the government entitled to the presumption that the facts favorable to their side?
Clearly they are.
From the jury's verdict?
Clearly they are. There's just simply no fact to support any of the elements. There are five critical elements, or five major components to the government's theory, the natural and probable consequences theory, which was the only theory Mr. Sagan-Nicholas was prosecuted under. And those five components, number one, you have to show the three elements for aiding and abetting, knowledge of the actual knowledge of the perpetrators, which is Varela here, Varela's intent to commit a crime.
Is it Varela's intent to commit a crime or Alvarado's intent to commit a crime?
No, Alvarado. This is exactly why the state has failed to meet its burden. Because Alvarado was never even a Confederate. There are two undisputed facts here that make it conclusive, or two undisputed rulings. Number one, you got the trial court dismissing any conspiracy charge. Okay? That was at the close of the prosecution's case. Number two, you have a jury verdict that says we do not find true that Mr. Sagan-Nicholas vicariously discharged a firearm. What does that mean? We know Alvarado discharged a firearm. Then if the jury had believed that Mr. Alvarado, the shooter, and Mr. Sagan-Nicholas were Confederates, then Mr. Sagan-Nicholas, by definition, has to be vicariously liable for whatever Mr. Alvarado does. And your case, the case, I believe, is you had a dissenting opinion in that case, Judge Pregerson, that the case that I'm referring to, if you give me a moment, Your Honor, Mitchell versus Pronti.
I'm glad that it put a smile on your face.
The Mitchell versus Pronti case, Your Honor, says that if you have a jury verdict that's conclusive, in that case, Mitchell, independent witness testimony had said that he was a driver of the car who ran over the victim. In addition, Mitchell, the petitioner, had said to the police, although he recanted that trial, he had said that he was in fact a driver. Jury verdict came down that he wasn't a driver. They found it not true that he was a driver of the vehicle, and the court said that's a conclusive fact. Now, if the court will allow me to go through the elements, we're talking about knowledge. In order for you to show just the aiding and abetting part of the natural and probable consequences theory, you have to show three elements. Knowledge of the perpetrator's intent to commit a specific crime. Not just any crime, a specific crime. Here, the prosecution alleged that the crime Varela committed was a challenge to a fight. And the way he committed that crime was he threw up a gang sign while they were driving down the Baker Street. Now, it is undisputed in the record. There is no conflicting testimony whatsoever. Mr. Sagan-Nicholas had no idea that Varela was going to go into gang territory and throw up a gang sign and make it into this general confrontation. Mr. Sagan-Nicholas signed on only to one crime, and that was to go in, find Scrappy, the guy who had earlier sucker punched Varela, and arrange a one-on-one fight to crush the beef. Period. That was it. So there is no knowledge there. Then you have to actually intend to aid and encourage and facilitate.
Isn't the evidence that there were two other gang members in the car, giving all reasonable intentments to the prosecution's some evidence that they intended to do more than a one-on-one fight?
Your Honor, that would be respectfully pure speculation. That would be guilt by association.
Yeah, but I speculated pretty fast on that, didn't I? I mean, I could see that coming.
Well, if
couldn't he see that coming?
If you say,
couldn't the jury find that coming?
Let's assume that the two gang members were in the car and they wanted to generally go in and confront other gang members.
That's right.
Okay? No problem with that. But then you have a jury verdict that says the shooter is not a confederate with Mr. San Nicolas. You can't deny that. You have a judge, as a matter of law, finding that Mr. San Nicolas has had no agreement, did not conspire, had no agreement whatsoever with the shooter. What you also have here, Your Honor, is that when they go down to this gang territory, they're on their way out. They make a U-turn, they're on their way out, then you got ambush. It just baffles me that the California Court of Appeal would say there is no evidence of ambush when at least four witnesses, two of whom were prosecution witnesses because they got a deal, and they had to, as a prerequisite of that deal, testify truthfully. They came on the stand and they said that they were attacked and they reacted. Mr. Alvarado, and one other critical information here, Your Honor, there is no evidence, nothing, that shows that Mr. San Nicolas had any knowledge whatsoever that Mr. Alvarado, the shooter, had a gun. None. Alvarado didn't tell anyone he had a gun. He had bought it maybe a few months before. It was a .22. It was put in his pocket. But I don't know if you've seen a .22 gun, but it's probably smaller than the palm of my hands. And he had it in his pocket. No one knew he had a gun. Now, to say that Mr. San Nicolas should have foreseen that a person he had no idea had a weapon is going to pull out a gun and start shooting at people, it just doesn't make sense.
He took a gun to a fist fight.
He took a gun. He always carried a gun. He never used that gun. He always carried a gun. Mr. San Nicolas grew up with guns. His father taught him how to shoot. There is nothing. Look, there is no question that he did something wrong. Yeah, he's a felon. He had a gun. No question about that. He also, in retrospect, should not have agreed to help his friend Varela in a one-on-one fight. But he's not murder. I mean, how we can jump from that to murder, to me, you got to show the five elements. Jackson versus Virginia. And under de novo review, I might add. I mean, forget about AEDPA for a moment. Even if you add AEDPA to this, there's plenty of cases from this circuit that have applied AEDPA to facts much more stronger than what we have here. And they said it's just not enough.
You want to save some time?
Yes, Your Honor. Thank you.
Thanks.
Good morning, Your Honor. May it please the Court. I am Kevin Viena, California Deputy Attorney General, here on behalf of Respondent and Appellee in this matter.
Mr. Viena, do you agree with Mr. Farmani that there was a binding determination by the trial court, that Alvarado was not a Confederate?
No.
I didn't think so.
Just in case I miss any of it, I think I disagree with essentially everything that Mr. Farmani said. So there's no question about that. I disagree with much of what he said.
Am I mistaken in my memory that there was a woman driving in the area and saw some of this?
No, you are not mistaken at all, Your Honor. One of the witnesses at trial, although a reluctant witness at trial, was a woman who was involved with one of the Baker Street gang members, or former gang members, and she arrived on the scene shortly after Mr. San Nicolas and his three Confederates had slowly driven through the Baker Street area, flashed gang signs, and issued an invitation to fight.
And did she witness the confrontation, the shooting?
As I read it, it's somewhat difficult to tell how much she witnessed, but her description is that as she arrived, she can see that something is wrong, and she sees four people emerged from Mr. San Nicolas' car essentially simultaneously, two of them with guns in their hands, and shooting follows almost immediately.
And did she testify that the driver of the vehicle, and there's no doubt that was San Nicolas, right? Did she testify that the driver of the vehicle got out and fired his weapon?
She did, Your Honor. Although, I mean, to be fair, I would have to say that I think she was mistaken about that. That is, that's certainly against the weight of the evidence, but as you may be implying, since that was evidence before the jury, the jury could disagree with my assessment of it, and they were entitled to
credit that. They could have relied upon that.
They could have, yes, Your Honor. According to, I think that is clear from Smith versus Cavazos or Cavazos versus Smith that I referred the court to here yesterday, and other cases talking about essentially the jury decides what weight to give any of the evidence and what to believe and what not to believe and resolves conflicts in the evidence. But
Smith versus Cavazos, I'm familiar with that case, but that was an AEDPA case. Mr. Farmani says this is not an AEDPA case. Do you want to address that?
Yes, Your Honor. Mr. Farmani, I believe, is mistaken about whether this is an AEDPA case or not. The case was raised, or the issue about sufficiency of the evidence was raised in a somewhat unusual manner in the state court. And I'm sorry, I don't believe that the AOB is in the excerpts of record, but if the court would like it, the AOB meaning Mr. San Nicolas' opening brief in the appeal is not in the excerpts of record. But the claim that was raised was sort of a combination claim. That was that because the accomplice testimony of Mr. Martinez and Mr. Varela was not adequately corroborated, there wasn't, without their testimony, there wasn't sufficient evidence that Mr. San Nicolas was an aider and abettor in the crime of an aider and abettor in the fight challenge or breach of the peace by challenging someone to a fight in public. And that's why much of the decision from the Court of Appeal addresses the question about whether there's sufficient evidence or whether there was sufficient corroboration. And that's why the court makes the statement, for example, that to show adequate corroboration, you don't have to show proof beyond a reasonable doubt of each element of the crime. His statement with regard to that is out of context, I believe. So the court spent a great deal of time talking about corroboration, finding it to be adequate, and then after finding it to be adequate, not spending much time on the remaining question about sufficiency of the evidence that he was an aider and abettor because it was unnecessary. If I might indicate how I think the jury could have seen the evidence and seen the evidence in a way that supported the prosecutor's argument that this was an organized gang hit. That is not just that Mr. San Nicolas was not a mediator or a diplomat, but he was engaged in a provocation to fight with the highly foreseeable outcome that someone from the San Nicolas car would shoot someone in the Baker Street gang. Mr. Varela wants to retaliate because he's been sucker punched. He and Martinez were unable to achieve their goal, their required goal as gang members, after the fight broke out at the Rite Aid. Varela and Martinez go home, and Varela immediately calls San Nicolas, who has a history of gang association. San Nicolas immediately comes over in the car. As they're getting in the car to go, Varela says to Martinez, "We are going to start a fight." That is, not "I'm going to fight Scrappy." We are going to start a fight. So San Nicolas' attempt to narrow the involvement and the purpose of driving to Baker Street is mistaken. They go not directly to Baker Street, but instead they go directly to the motel room where San Nicolas and Alvarado are staying together. San Nicolas has gotten that. As they pull up, San Nicolas shouts, "Baker." So he indicates to Alvarado what's going on. that is, he and other gang members are in the car, and they're headed to Baker Street. Or at least certainly the jury could infer that that communication indicates both of them know what's going on, because Alvarado immediately gets in the car. Just preceding that, according to Varela, San Nicolas had pulled out his gun and offered it to Varela, which is pretty darn good evidence of what was foreseeable in this fight that Varela is going over to start. Some shooting is going to occur.
Was it Alvarado that testified that San Nicolas said, "We're going over there"?
Yeah, I think those are the words, "We're going over there." But it is clear from his shout, "Baker," that he knows where they're going. And it's also obvious that he knows what's going on by his immediate response when they get to Baker Street. But Varela flashes the gang sign when they get to Baker Street, but Mr. San Nicolas is engaged in behavior that is provocative of the fight. That is, driving slowly through the neighborhood, joining the other three occupants of the car in turning and looking at, I think the term the court may be familiar with is mad dogging, in the neighborhood of the opposing gang. They are there to provoke a fight.
Also keeping the volume of his radio up.
Volume up. And as my colleague repeated, perhaps too often, wearing dark glasses, but in our briefing. But then, when they get there, the truth of the matter is that Varela does initiate, and not just initiate, he commits the first assault. He jumps out of the car and throws a beer can, a full beer can. So they have all done this together. The prosecutor argued that this was an organized hit. The Court of Appeal, the California Court of Appeal, said this looks like an organized retaliation with individuals involved in guns. All of it's foreseeable.
Ben, up to now you haven't told me why Mr. Farmani was wrong in saying Alvarado was found by the jury not to be a Confederate.
I will answer that in two ways. First of all, he says that the trial court dismissed the conspiracy charge. True, but not quite complete. The charge that was dismissed by the trial court was conspiracy to commit murder. And the jury could count one. The jury could reasonably have concluded that that the prosecution had not proved beyond a reasonable doubt that the agreement to go start a fight included the specific intent to go and commit murder. But the jury was still instructed on an uncharged conspiracy to go there and provoke a fight. And then the jury did find that that Mr. San Nicolas was not guilty of vicarious liability. They have simply found him not guilty of that crime. We have what looks to me like an inconsistent verdict, I would agree, but inconsistent verdicts do not render invalid an otherwise supported verdict. They may simply have misunderstood. And we won't know and can't know. We only know that they found him not guilty of vicarious liability. It is a somewhat unusual concept, and they may simply have misunderstood. But there is no factual finding by either jury verdict or the trial court that Mr. San Nicolas and Mr. Alvarado were not engaged, jointly engaged, co-perpetrators in provoking a fight.
What jury verdict was not guilty of what vicarious liability?
Sentencing enhancement allegations attached to the charge that applied to Mr. San Nicolas, count two, murder, not conspiracy, but actual murder, was that there were two allegations that the jury found not true. One was that the crime was committed in furtherance of gang activity, and the second was that he was vicariously armed. That is, another co-perpetrator had a firearm and used a firearm in the commission of the offense.
So they found that the second one, another co-perpetrator was armed, was not true.
They found, as to Mr. San Nicolas, yes, Your Honor. And they also found not true the associated gang allegation.
And they found that another co-perpetrator was not armed because Varela was not armed. And Alvarado was not a co-perpetrator.
I believe Alvarado is a co-perpetrator. That is, he is also aiding and abetting when they go. He is in the car to back up his fellows as they go to Baker Street. That is at least a reasonable inference to be drawn from the evidence.
What is the inference that you draw from the specific jury finding that another co-perpetrator was not armed?
That the jury made a mistake. But they didn't resolve the question. They didn't believe that had been proved beyond a reasonable doubt, or they simply didn't understand the concept of vicarious liability.
Isn't the only way to interpret that, if it is not a mistake, that Varela was not armed, he was a co-perpetrator, and Alvarado was armed, but he wasn't a co-perpetrator?
I think it would be a mistake to say that Alvarado is not a co-perpetrator, but they might have been mistaken about...
It's a mistake the jury made, right?
So yes.
Is there any reason to go behind the jury verdict finding on that under Smith versus Cavazos, which you cited?
Under Smith versus Cavazos, all we know is that what we know from Smith is that we analyze all of the evidence to see whether a rational juror could have found the elements proved.
And this rational jury found that Alvarado was not a co-perpetrator.
I don't believe that's a finding. There is extensive federal law and state law that says inconsistent verdicts don't affect the sufficiency of the evidence evaluation. We are unable to divine.
Don't you have to give credence to all the jury's findings, not just the ones the prosecution wants?
In sufficiency of the evidence, we have to give credence to all of the evidence. That's all that's required.
But the evidence, we're going over the same ground. Apparently, the jury found the evidence was not sufficient that there was another co-perpetrator armed. Right? You agree with that?
They found him not guilty of being vicarious.
Well, they found not true the special allegation.
Yes, thank you.
That there was another co-perpetrator armed.
Yes.
What do we do with that?
Well, perhaps they took Judge Hawkins' tack and said that and believed that San Nicolas was the shooter when he got out. I mean, that is an explanation. I don't think it's the best one, but it is a possible one.
But San Nicolas was on trial. He couldn't be the co-perpetrator.
Under state law, I don't want to be presumptuous and imply that I can instruct you, Judge Bay, about California law. But an aider and abettor is a perpetrator. So
yeah.
The prosecutor didn't argue well, or perhaps it wasn't clarified that Alvarado was an aider and abettor.
Give me a rational basis on which we can use the finding by the jury that another co-perpetrator was not armed, other than San Nicolas, couldn't refer to San Nicolas, he's not a co-perpetrator. Varela was not armed, and Alvarado was not a co-perpetrator.
I disagree as a matter of California law about whether they were principals in the crime and co-perpetrators. But they were aiders and abettors, and I think the jury's finding with regard to the true finding of not vicariously armed is simply a mistake. But that's my explanation, and it may well be that the prosecutor didn't emphasize Alvarado's role as an aider and abettor because he was the actual shooter. So perhaps that was not crystallized and clarified. But I don't believe that a not true finding establishes as a matter of fact binding on any court that San Nicolas and Alvarado were not involved in this together.
No, they may be involved in this together, but the question is, was the natural and probable consequence the murder? If that can only be laid at the door of San Nicolas if Alvarado was a co-perpetrator, the finding by the jury makes him not a co-perpetrator.
I don't think it does make him one. The jury's finding was that the shooting was done by a co-perpetrator. That's one of the elements, one of the five elements that Mr. Farmani referred to. That is, Mr. San Nicolas intended to aid and abet.
But there were only two people with guns. That's clear. One was San Nicolas. He's not a co-perpetrator because he's a principal. The other is Alvarado.
You're asking me for a rational explanation for how they reached that.
I think so.
And my answer is they made a mistake, or they were lenient, or they didn't understand. But they're fine. But those things happen, and that's why inconsistent verdicts are permitted.
All right.
Thank you very much.
You've heard enough. If there are no other questions, thank you, Your Honor.
Okay.
Tony Farmani again. In a case decided by this court, the court said that special verdicts by the jury are conclusive. So it would be a violation of the Sixth Amendment right to say otherwise. The jury here found that Mr. San Nicolas did not vicariously discharge a firearm. The court found that there was no conspiracy between Alvarado and Mr. San Nicolas as a matter of law at the close of the prosecution's case. That right there by itself negates the fourth element that is required to be shown by the state. And that fourth element is a confederate in the crime must commit a crime that's different than what was originally contemplated. Let's call it target crime and non-target crime. I'll give the government the benefit of doubt and say that the target crime here, which was a challenge to a fight, Alvarado was a confederate. Let's just say for a moment he was. How you get from that to a confederate to murder, to natural power consequences, where Mr. San Nicolas had no idea that Alvarado was armed, I just don't see it. I don't see the connect. The logical disconnect in the government's case is so wide, is so huge, that the jury, 2 days later, over the weekend, three jurors, two of whom submitted affidavits, came forward and said, we don't believe in a verdict. We can't believe in a verdict. And the reason why they said that, Your Honor, that brings us to the second issue. I think it's a strong issue as well. Although that issue can and should be analyzed under AEDPA, the prosecution repeatedly over and over and over again told the jury during closing argument with the blessing of the trial court that they're not entitled to self-defense. In absolute terms, you don't have to look at the jury instructions. They're not entitled to self-defense. They were at the very least entitled to imperfect self-defense. There was testimony over in the trial that they were rushed with bats, with crowbars, with a metal disc. Anybody in Alvarado's position, even if his fear was unreasonable, he would have had an entitlement to an imperfect self-defense. Jury didn't even evaluate it, simply because the prosecution wanted to get a conviction for Mr. San Nicolas, who basically drove the car. He made a mistake. He drove the car there, but he didn't do anything. He didn't throw up a gang sign. He didn't know Varela was going to throw a gang sign. Even if he didn't know all that, even if he knew Varela was just this evil person, he didn't throw up a gang sign. Where is the knowledge that someone in the back seat of his car has got a gun? Where is the evidence? There's not one single evidence here that Mr. San Nicolas knew that anybody other than himself was armed. That right there should end the analysis. Whether you're going under AEDPA or you're going under...
couldn't you say in that situation with two gangs involved, let me know about what happens when you have two come together, that it's reasonably foreseeable that there's going to be a gun?
Your Honor, if anybody in the Bakersfield...
You probably have had a case. I don't know that I've been involved in a case that involves gang confrontations where there hasn't been a gun.
Your Honor, assume that to be true.
assume that it's reasonably foreseeable that you go to gang territory, a gun battle would ensue. Had it been a Baker member, the rival gang shooting at someone in the car, then I think we would have the provocative murder theory. He could have been prosecuted and convicted on the provocative murder theory. But you got a guy in the back seat of his car shooting the gun. Mr. San Nicolas would probably, for all we know, he probably was not crazy enough to drive down a gang territory knowing some 18-year-old who's got a lot of family issues sitting in the back of his car is going to be carrying a gun. He just simply didn't know. There's no evidence to the contrary. How can you hold a man who's been serving 11 years to this day for murder and then for life, for the rest of his life, a young man, simply because he drove to gang territory? Are we to say that any time you drive into gang territory, you sport sunglasses and shaved heads, and, you know, wear baggy clothes, that you know, that's it, your life is in danger? Are we going to give gang members, rival gang members, carte blanche, saying, you know, you can do whatever you want, as long as these people come in here looking like gang members? Mr. San Nicolas actually believed. He actually believed that he was going to go across the beef. That's what he went there. Even if he didn't go there, to jump from that to murder and give this man a life sentence would be injustice. Okay. Thank you, Your Honor.
Thank you very much.
Thank you. All right. That concludes this court session. And the court will adjourn.
All rise.
Let me see. You can get this one.